Okay, we're going to continue with historical expectations according to the Bible. This is part 13, and it's the 14th part of the biblical prophecy and postmillennialism. This will be part one of Jesus' Olivet Discourse. So for everyone keeping tally, there are your numbers. Question 45, how doth Christ execute the office of a king? Christ executed the office of a king in calling out of the world a people to himself and giving them officers, laws, and censures by which he visibly governs them, in bestowing saving grace upon his elect, rewarding their obedience and correcting them for their sins, preserving and supporting them under all their temptations and sufferings, restraining and overcoming all their enemies, and powerfully ordering all things for his own glory and their good, and also in taking vengeance on the rest who know not God and obey not the gospel. Why do I bring up the issue of Christ executing the office of a king in terms of New Testament prophecy? Well, because that's really what a lot of it is about. And particularly as we turn to this Olivet Discourse, we're going to spend a few sessions on this. It is important to understand that the key to unlocking a lot of the blocks of Matthew's teaching in particular is to look to Luke, who's giving us more of a chronological accounting. But Mark also doesn't do what Matthew does in putting this stuff into blocks. Why is that important? Well, because what we're going to talk about first of all is, in fact, the fall of Jerusalem. But as we looked last time, after we get beyond the bit in Matthew's gospel in particular concerning the fall of Jerusalem, he begins to take up other issues. There are other things. Now, he's organized all of this teaching in a block. And this block of teaching and is really the fifth block of teaching in Matthew's gospel. This block of teaching is concerned with the idea of divine judgment. He begins talking about Jerusalem, but he continues on talking about Judgment Day. And he talks about judgment and how it comes. Not all of the language in Matthew 24 pertains to 70 AD. There are a lot of preterists out there who are confused about this. They're confused in large part because they want to harmonize Mark and Luke with Matthew, when in fact Luke tells us very clearly he's the one setting things in order. He's giving the chronology. Matthew and Mark are giving teaching out of order. That's how it's working. And so not all of this teaching pertains to the same period of time. Matthew has simply arranged it that way. And that does not mean that it all pertains to Jerusalem. It all pertains to this idea of judgment. And it all pertains to judgment if you look at Matthew 23, at the end of that, Jesus is upbraiding them, the Jews. He's upbraiding them for their unbelief. He's telling them that judgment is coming. They're going to be held responsible, that generation, for all of the blood of righteous Abel under the blood of Zechariah, son of Berechiah, slain between the temple and the altar. Now, in the Jewish Bible, Abel is the first martyr in Genesis. Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, appears in 2 Chronicles. It is not just an A to Z in English, But in terms of Jewish scripture, Second Chronicles is the last book. So he's saying you're going to give a full account for all of the bloodshed. But that accounting, the destruction of Jerusalem, is the intrusion of the eschaton. It is, in fact, as every judgment of God, it's a foretaste of judgment day. It's not the second coming. It's not some spiritual appearing. I know there are a lot of theories out there. There is no resurrection of the dead. That all waits till the end of time, till Judgment Day. So, we want to begin looking and we want to be very careful to take note of what Jesus is saying and how all of this lines up. We're going to look at Matthew 24, 1 to 3, Mark 13, 1 to 4, and Luke 21, 5 to 7.
Matthew 24, verses 1 through 3. And Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him for to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said unto them, See ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, Tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign of thy coming, and of the end of the world?
Mark 13, verses 1 through 4. And as he went out of the temple, one of his disciples said unto him, Master, see what manner of stones and what buildings are here. And Jesus answering said unto them, Seest thou these great buildings? There shall not be left one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives over against the temple, Peter and James and John and Andrew asked him privately, Tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign when all these things shall be fulfilled?
Luke 21, verses 5 through 7. And as for some spake of the temple, how was it afforded with godly stones and gifts? He said, As for these things which ye behold, the days will come, in the which there shall not be left one stone upon another, that there shall not be another thrown down. Verse 7, And they asked him, saying, Master, but when shall these things be, and what sign will there be when these things shall come to pass?
Now I want you to look very carefully at what Luke is referring to here. Luke is, in fact, very much talking about the destruction of the temple. Luke's discussion is, in fact, revolving around that event. Now, he's not taken up with other questions like we see coming up in Matthew and Mark. In Luke's mind, there isn't this need to separate the idea of the second coming from the destruction of Jerusalem or the end of the eschaton. The Jews, on the other hand, to whom Matthew is writing, they're really stuck at that point. They don't see the difference. They're having trouble understanding that there's a first and a second advent. They see these things as almost coterminous. They're still going to be asking that question when Jesus is ascending. You know, when are you going to restore the kingdom to Israel? They're stuck at that point. And so what we have, their mistake, the disciples' mistake appears in this. They're, in fact, confusing the judgment that's coming against Israel, the destruction of the temple, with, in fact, this idea of the messianic kingdom arriving. they've telescoped these things together. You know, they don't see the distance between the two. They're looking at it through a telescope. It looks like it's right in front of them. Well, they don't see it, what is far off as being far off. And so their notion is that the kingdom is going to come when Jerusalem is destroyed. And furthermore, it may well be that they're confused about the whole nature of the second coming and judgment day in general. That at least appears to be the case in Matthew. But Jesus is setting out all the pieces of that teaching. In fact, is drawing them through this destruction to look beyond it to judgment day. I want to look at Ezekiel 11:23 and Zechariah 14, verse 4.
Ezekiel 11, verse 23. And the glory of the Lord went up from the midst of the city and stood upon the mountain which is on the east side of the city.
Zechariah 14, verse 4. And his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof toward the east. And toward the west, and there shall be a very great valley, and half of the mountain shall remove toward the north, and half of it toward the south.
Okay, so where is the Mount of Olives, according to that? East of Jerusalem. Why is this important? What's the significance of the location? We can begin to get some idea of that if we look at Luke 22:39 and Acts 1:12.
Luke 22:39, and he came out and went, as he was wont, to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples also followed.
Acts 1, verse 12, then returned they unto Jerusalem from the Mount of Olivet, which is from Jerusalem a Sabbath day's journey.
A Sabbath day's journey, it's, again, the significance of the location is, this is a place where, in fact, God, or I should say, it is the place to which the glory, when it departs from Israel, the glory cloud of the temple, it departs and it goes to the Mount of Olives. It is this place where, in fact, Jesus is going, he goes to teach. The Mount of Olives is where Jesus teaches. It's where he's praying in the garden. It's across the Brook Kidron. It's to the east of Jerusalem. The Mount of Olives is where he's going to be crucified, where he's going to be buried, where he's raised from the dead, and where he ascends into heaven. So the Mount of Olives is associated with his second coming. I'm going to look next at Matthew 24:4-8, Mark 13:5-8, and Luke 21:8-11.
Matthew 24. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall rise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come.
Mark 13:5-3. And Jesus answering them began to say, Take heed lest any man deceive you. And then he shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And when ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, be ye not troubled. For such things must needs be, but the end shall not be yet. The nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be earthquakes in various places, and there shall be famines and troubles. These are the beginnings of sorrows.
Luke 21, verses 8 through 11. They said, "Take heed that ye be not deceived, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ. And the time draweth near, go ye not therefore after them. But when ye shall hear of wars and commotions, be not terrified, for these things must first come to pass, but the end is not by and by. Then said he unto them, Nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and great earthquakes shall be in diverse places, and famines and pestilences, and fearful sights and great signs shall there be from heaven."
Okay, so what is Jesus doing here then? He begins to give them a number of warnings. Why? Well, they're confused. They know, and we'll come back to this, but they know from Daniel that the time of Messiah means the end of the reign of not only the Roman Empire, that's winding down, but also that the temple and the holy city are going to be trodden down by the Gentiles. They know that this is coming. Now, the danger particularly here is that these people are going to confuse all of these things that are happening with the second coming, which is exactly what the preterists do. It's not the second coming, and he's telling them, don't be deceived by this. There are going to be many coming, saying, lo, here I am, and there I am, but the end is not yet. In other words, what he's about to describe with respect to the destruction of Jerusalem, it's not it. That's not the end. There's a lot more to come after that. We want to look at Matthew 24, 9-14, Mark 13, 9-13, and Luke 21, 12-19.
Matthew 24, verses 9-14. Then shall he deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. Many false prophets shall rise, and shall deceive many. Because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come.
Mark 13:9-13. Take heed to yourselves, for they shall deliver you up to the councils, and in the synagogues ye shall be beaten, and ye shall be brought before rulers and kings for my sake, for a testimony against them. And the gospel must first be published amongst all nations. When they shall lead you and deliver you up, take no thought beforehand what ye shall speak, neither do ye premeditate, but whatsoever shall be given you in that hour, that speak ye, for it is not ye that speak, but the Holy Ghost. Now the brother shall betray the brother to death, and the father the son. The children shall rise up against their parents, and shall cause them to be put to death. And ye shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved.
Luke 21, verses 12 through 19. But before all these, they shall lay their hands on you and persecute you, delivering you up to the synagogues and into prisons, being brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake. And it shall turn to you for a testimony. Settle it therefore in your hearts, not to meditate before what ye shall answer. For I will give you a mouth and wisdom, which all your adversaries shall not be able to gainsay nor resist. And ye shall be betrayed both by parents and brethren and kinsfolk and friends, and some of you shall they cause to be put to death. And ye shall be hated for all men you shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but there shall not an hair of your head perish. In your patience possess ye your souls.
Okay, so here again. These are warnings that really serve a twofold purpose. He's talking in terms both of the destruction of Jerusalem still and Judgment Day. He's talking about the destruction of Jerusalem and all of the calamities that are going to befall the Jews leading up to that. But he's also telling them, and it's particularly clear in a couple of places, that witness that they have is going to be beyond Jerusalem. In other words, there's already a hint that Jerusalem is not the end of everything. Jerusalem is the beginning of these end-time judgments. And we need to understand that the end times, really, the last days, encompass everything that pertain to the gospel era. So he's saying that all of these terrible things are going to happen. But again, don't think that this means this is the end of time. There are still things beyond the destruction of Jerusalem that must transpire as well. What should we understand by the statement that the gospel should be preached in all the world? In order to understand that a little bit better, we're going to look at Acts 2:5, Romans 10:18, Romans 1:8, Colossians 1:6, and 1:23.
Acts 2, verse 5. And there were dwelling at Jerusalem Jews, devout men, and of every nation under heaven.
Romans 10:18, but I say, have you not heard? Yes, verily, their sound went unto all the earth, and their words unto the ends of the world.
Romans 1, verse 8. First, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all, that your faith is spoken of throughout the whole world.
Colossians 1, verses 6 and verse 23, which is come unto you as it is in all the world, and bringeth forth fruit as it doth also in you, since the day ye heard of it, and knew the grace of God and truth. And verse 23, if ye continue in the faith grounded and settled, and be not moved away from the hope of the gospel which ye have heard, and which was preached to every creature which is under heaven, whereof I, Paul, am made a minister.
Okay, so I think there really are a couple of things going on here that we need to take into account. This destruction of Jerusalem is coming at a time at the end of that, after the period of 70 weeks, Daniel's 70th week, the determination has been made. Jerusalem, the whole fate of the temple and all of that has been declared, which we're going to see because that comes up in all of these accounts, Daniel's prophecy. But beyond that prophecy regarding them, remember, Daniel also had this idea of a kingdom of stone arising during the period of the fourth kingdom, the Roman Empire. And the delay between the destruction of Jerusalem, or between Christ's ascension, I should say, and the destruction of Jerusalem, between this discourse and the destruction of Jerusalem, that delay is the time that it took for the gospel to be spread throughout that fourth empire. Now, that fourth empire does not represent every single nation in the world. But it does represent the conquering of those empires by the kingdom of stone. And that represents the beginning of this principle of the gospel working itself out throughout history. In other words, the gospel manages to leaven all of the Roman Empire. Then Jerusalem is destroyed. Then, as the Roman Empire deteriorates and falls, this gospel is being spread farther and farther abroad. So Jesus is talking here about the gospel being preached in all the world. He's talking about it being spread into the whole Roman Empire. But we need to keep in mind that it's being spread into the whole Roman Empire ultimately with the goal of being spread into all of the earth, literally. Which is what we saw in the Psalms, for example. So it's referred to as all of the earth because, in fact, this represents that kingdom or that earthly opposition to the kingdom of stone that the world musters up. The Roman Empire is the last great hurrah for heathen empires in the world. We're not going to see a heathen empire like that ever again. Right? Not with that kind of consolidated power. We want to look now at Matthew 24, 15, 16, Mark 13, 14, Luke 21, 20, and the first part of verse 21, but you can read it. And we want to look at that in light of Daniel 9, 27.
Matthew 24, 15, and 16. When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, whoso readeth, let him understand. Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains.
Mark 13, verse 14. But when ye shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing where it ought not, let him that readeth understand. Then let them that be in Judea flee to the mountains.
Luke 21, verses 20, and the first half of verse 21. When ye shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh. Then let them which are in Judea flee to the mountains. And let them that are in the midst of it depart out.
Daniel 9:27. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. And in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. And for the overspreading of abominations he shall make it desolate, even unto the consummation. And that determined shall be poured upon the desolate.
Okay. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are all referring to that passage in Daniel. They're talking about that desolation that was brought when the Romans destroyed the temple. The temple is going to be destroyed. That is fixed. The moment Christ is crucified, the determination goes forth. That's the end of that cycle. The 70 weeks comes to an end. It's just a matter of time till the judgment that was foretold is poured out. And that's the end of them as a nation that represents all of the Mosaic economy. They're gone. It'll never represent that again. Notice here in these verses something that's happened, and we've seen this. It's gone at first. The first section in verses 4 to 8 in Matthew 24, as you see in question 240, that first section of verses, that's really given to help people understand that they shouldn't be confusing this with the second advent. This judgment is not that. You know, kind of, it's almost the reverse of what is said in the book of Acts. If you remember in the book of Acts, on the day of Pentecost, Peter says, with reference to the book of Joel, this is that. Jesus is actually saying here, this is not that. You know, this destruction of Jerusalem is not that. By the way, there are some things that are going to come to pass in the interim. Get ready. And now, in this section, he's saying, when you see this, it's beginning. It's in the process. Now we're there. Now, Matthew and Mark have a little bit to add to this. If we look at Matthew 24, 17, and 18, and Mark 13, 15, and 16.
Matthew 24, verses 17 and 18. Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house, neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes.
Mark 13, verses 15 and 16. Let him that is on the housetop not go down to the house, neither enter therein, to take anything out of his house. Let him that is in the field not turn back again for to take up his garment.
Okay. Here, again, what we're told is there's going to be, this is going to come suddenly. The Romans are going to come and do this suddenly. It's going to happen very quickly. But it doesn't happen overnight. It's not going to happen exactly when Christ is crucified. He's telling them there's going to be a period of time. What's going to happen during this period of time? Well, the gospel has to be spread throughout the whole Roman Empire. In other words, the truth is going to be preserved. And then when the truth is secured, the reason for the Mosaic economy no longer exists at all. The temple is going to be torn down. They're going to do it. Not because they're Christians, they're pagans, but because the Jews have rejected Christ. And there, again, that's the first warning. Don't confuse this with the second coming. They say here is Christ or there is Christ. Don't believe it. He's going to come back to that. We'll reiterate that point. Okay, look at Matthew 24, 19 to 22. Mark 13, 17 to 20. Luke 21, second part of verse 21 to 24. And we want to also, we'll look at that first, and then we'll look at another verse.
Matthew 24, 19 to 22. And woe unto them that are with children, and to them that give suck in those days. But pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then shall be a great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened.
Mark 13:17-20. But woe to them that are with child, and to them that give suck in those days. And pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, for in those days shall be affliction, such as was not from the beginning of the creation, which God created unto this time, neither shall be. And except that the Lord had shortened those days, no flesh should be saved. But for the elect's sake, whom he hath chosen, he hath shortened the days.
Luke 21, verses 21 through 24. Then let them which are in Judea flee to the mountains, and let them which are in the midst of it depart out, and let not them that are in the countries enter therein. For these shall be the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. But woe unto them that give suck in those days, for there shall be great distress in the land and wrath upon this people, and they shall fall by the edge of the sword, and shall be led away captive into all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles be fulfilled.
Okay, so The Great Tribulation in the Bible is referring to the destruction of Jerusalem. It's not some future event. We're not awaiting that. It's already happened. There were Christians who lived through it. A lot of them. Was it a very traumatic time? Of course, he's telling you. But all of the language that's used is telling them to prepare. Be ready to go. At a moment's notice, you need to get out of there. Very much akin to what happened with the Jews at the Exodus. They had to leave. They left almost in the middle of what they were doing. God tells them, leave. Time to go. And he's telling them, don't be surprised at how quickly this will go. Now, the significance of this identification is really underscored if we look back at Luke 19, 41 to 44.
Luke 19, verse 41. And when he was come near, he behold the city and wept over it, saying, if thou hast known, even thou, at least in this day, the things which belong unto thine peace, but now they are hid from thine eyes. Verse 43. For the day shall come unto thee that thine enemy shall cast a trench about thee and compass thee and around and keep thee in on every side. Verse 44. And when thou shalt lay thee with the ground and with thine children within thee, they shall not leave in thee one stone upon another, because thou knowest not the time of thine visitation.
Jesus' warning here is actually, he's talking to the Pharisees and those who are with him, those who are questioning him. And he's telling them that Jerusalem is going to be destroyed. Not one stone is going to be left upon another. You know, this is going to be a horrible thing. It's going to lay thee even with the ground and thy children within thee. So why is it he's telling his disciples later, be ready, take your kids and run? Because this judgment is going to be total. He's already warned the Pharisees. They don't listen. All right, we want to look now at Matthew 24, 23 to 25 and Mark 13, 21 to 23.
Matthew 24, verses 23 through 25. Then if any man shall say unto you, lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that, if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Behold, I have told you before.
Mark 13, verses 21 through 23. And then if any man shall say to you, lo, here is Christ, or lo, he is there, believe him not. The false Christ and false prophets shall rise and shall show signs and wonders to seduce, if it were possible, even the elect. But take ye heed, behold, I have foretold these things.
Okay, so what is he saying? What's his point here? He's saying, look, again, I told you before, that is, I told you earlier in this discourse, don't believe it. If they tell you during that time, here is Christ or there is Christ, I'm not there. Don't be carried away. Don't get distracted. It's not the end. It's the end of Jerusalem, but it's not the end of the world. It's not the second advent. Yes, there's judgment coming. In the sense that there's judgment, there's a divine presence that comes. This is not the second personal, visible return of our Lord. And he wants people to be very clear about that. Don't believe them. How easy would it be to be deceived on that point? He says, they would deceive the very elect if it were possible. The people who fall into full preterism are not elect. They're deceived. People who buy into all this partial preterism, they're enabling the deception of a lot of people because they're not rightly dividing the Word of God in many, many places. This is talking about the destruction of Jerusalem here. But that's not the main eschatological theme of the New Testament. It figures large in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Beyond that, it's really something that's vanishing away. It's the old world of types and shadows going away. What they're doing is, Matthew and Mark here, is that they're reiterating both the warning that it's not the second coming and the need for vigilance as that judgment approaches. It's dangerous times. They're going to be laying every stone even with the ground. They're going to be going after everyone. They're not going to, the Romans are cruel. They're not going to allow women or children to escape just because they're women or children. Okay, Matthew 24:26-28, and I want to draw this comparison with Luke 17:22-25.
Matthew 24:26-28. Wherefore, if they shall say unto you, behold, he is in the desert, go not forth. Behold, he is in the secret chamber, believe it not. For as the lightning cometh out of the east and shineth even unto the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For wheresoever the carcass is, there will the evils be gathered together.
Luke 17:22-25. And he said unto the disciples, the days will come when ye shall desire to see one of the days of the Son of Man, and ye shall not see it. And they shall say to you, see here or see there, go not after them nor follow them. For as the lightning that lighteth out of the one part under heaven shineth unto the other part under the heaven, so shall also the Son of Man be in his day. But first must he suffer many things and be rejected of this generation.
The comparison that is being made in Matthew 24 is the comparison to the second coming. He is putting it in that context here because it is a type of judgment. But if we look at it in terms of Luke, Luke separates that out. He separates out this idea of the second coming, the Son of Man in his day, and makes it clear, first, he has to suffer many things that we rejected in this generation. The second coming in Luke 17 uses this language, but separates it from this storyline that, or this teaching block, I should say, that Matthew has going in his gospel. And it does so because there are two different things. Matthew's just bringing the theme of judgment together. He's talking to Jews. The judgment on Jerusalem is as close to judgment day as anyone who is Jewish could ever imagine. It's going to have a lot of the contours of that. You know, Luke is talking to people who don't and probably won't have that kind of intimate familiarity. They're not going to be there when the Romans come. In fact, a lot of Luke's audience were Romans who were converted. You know, they're looking at the destruction of Jerusalem from the other side of that great divide. So again, don't confuse the two. Destruction of Jerusalem, second coming, they're not the same thing. but they're comparable because they both involve judgment. Matthew 24, 29 to 31, Mark 13, 24 to 27, and Luke 21, 25 to 28.
Matthew 24, verses 29 through 31. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the power of the heaven shall be shaken, and then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory, and he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other.
Mark 13, 24, 27. But in those days after that tribulation, the sun shall be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars of heaven shall fall, and the powers that are in heaven shall be shaken. And then shall they see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory. And then shall he send his angels, and shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from the uttermost part of the earth, the othermost part of heaven.
Luke 21, verses 25 through 28. And there shall be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth the distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear, and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. And then shall they see the Son of Man come in a cloud with power and great glory. And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth nigh.
Okay, so here again, if we stop and think about what interest does Luke's audience have in the destruction of Jerusalem? Well, the interest in Mark holds this out as well. And as does Matthew, the fact is this. The destruction of Jerusalem, that so far from being the end, it's really the beginning. When that happens, when men see the judgment of God, when they're aware that God, in fact, has wrought this judgment upon the Jews for their unbelief, that's going to be part of that preparation of the gospel. It's to the Jew first and then to the Gentile. But their rejection, their turning away, is what turns the gospel to the Gentiles. Their cutting off is great gain to the Gentiles. We're going to come back to that later when we talk about what Paul says in Romans. But this is their cutting off. And their cutting off really precipitates the sending of his angels, his messengers, to the four winds, or the four corners of the earth, to gather in all of the elect. You know, once Jerusalem falls, once the Romans put an end to that temple, Christianity, for the first time, in the eyes of the Gentiles in particular, becomes something that's distinguishable from Judaism. It's no longer going to be looked at as some obscure Jewish sect. It becomes a major force in the world scene. And that's accomplished providentially through the casting down of Jerusalem. The thing that procured that judgment was the rejection of Christ by the Jews. Now we're going to look at a few passages, and we're going to look at this again. I want to look at Judges 5, 4 and 5, Isaiah 13, 10 and 13, Isaiah 34, 3 to 5, Ezekiel 32, 2, 7 and 8, Jeremiah 4, 11, 23 and 24, and Joel 2, 1 and 2.
Judges 5, verses 4 and 5. Lord, when thou wentest out of Seir, when thou marchest out of the field of Edom, the earth trembled and the heavens dropped, the clouds also dropped water. The mountains melted from before the Lord, even that Sinai from before the Lord God of Israel.
Isaiah 13:10-13. Ten, for the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light. The sun shall be darkened in his goings forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. 13, therefore I will shake the heavens, and the earth shall remove out of her place in the wrath of the Lord of hosts, and in the days of his fierce anger.
Isaiah 34:3-5. Their slain also shall be cast out, and their stink shall come up out of their carcasses, and the mountains shall be melted with their blood. And all the host of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll. And all their hosts shall fall down, as the leaf falleth from the vine, and as a falling fig from the fig tree. For my sword shall be bathed in heaven. Behold, it shall come down upon Idumea, and upon the people of my curse to judgment.
Ezekiel 32:2-7-8. Verse 2. Son of man, take up a lamentation for Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and say unto him, thou art like a young lion of the nations, and thou art as a whale in the seas. And thou camest forth with thy rivers, and troublest the waters with thy feet, and foulest their rivers. Verses 7 and 8. And when I shall put thee out, I will cover the heaven and make the stars thereof dark. I will cover the sun with a cloud, and the moon shall not give her light. All the bright lights of heaven will I make dark over thee, and set darkness upon thy land, saith the Lord.
Jeremiah 4:11, at that time it shall be said, this people unto Jerusalem, a dry wind of the high places and wilderness toward the daughter of my people, not to fan nor to cleanse. Verse 23 and 24, I behold the earth, and lo, it was without form and void, and the heavens, and they had no light. Verse 24, I behold the mountains, and lo, they trembled, and all the hills moved lightly.
Joel 2:1-10. Verse 1. Blow ye the trumpet in Zion, and sound the alarm in the holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Lord cometh, for it is nigh at hand. And verse 10. The earth shall quake before them, the heaven shall tremble, the sun and the moon shall be dark, and the stars shall withdraw their shining.
Okay, so these passages tell us the language of the sun darkening, stars falling. That language is language, first, of divine judgment. That's language that indicates nations being removed from under heaven and the leaders of those people being cast down. They're no longer going to be stars in the firmament. They're not going to be part of that system, that worldly system. They're being removed from their power. When the Bible talks about the shaking of the heavens, it's really talking about the shaking of the governments of the earth, the nations, the societies and their leaders. And this language then that we have, remember that language immediately after the tribulation of those days, talking about Jerusalem, the sun will be dark and the moon will not give her light, stars shall fall from heaven. The moon not giving her light, well, the Old Testament economy, that is in fact reflective. It's the moon no longer giving her light. The stars falling down, the powers of heaven being shaken. Jerusalem, when it's shaken, it's not only indicating the shaking off of the Mosaic economy, but it signals the end of the reign of those kingdoms that Daniel prophesied, the four empires, ending with the Romans. It was when the Romans destroyed Jerusalem, they sealed their own fate as well. Right? It was they brought judgment on themselves. Remember, God very often brought nations against Israel to punish them. The problem is these nations always punish beyond what God deems just. And so the pendulum of justice swings and they have to be punished in return. They're not punishing for the glory of God, they're punishing for their own profit. So all of this language is language talking about the end of this era. All these prophecies in Daniel are coming to an end. They're being fulfilled. You know, this all ends with the removal of Israel as a sovereign nation. Now, that's only for a time. But the cause of that, the Romans, in doing that, they've sealed their own doom. They've provoked the wrath of God upon themselves. So, you know, there's a darkening of all of that power. We want to look at Matthew 26, 63 and 64.
Matthew 26, verses 63 and 64. But Jesus held his peace, and the high priest answered and said unto him, I adjure thee by the living God that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus said unto him, Thou hast said, nevertheless I say it unto you, hereafter shall ye see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven.
And coming in clouds of heaven. God travels in clouds to bring his judgments. So, the destruction of Jerusalem, Jesus claims that as really the final proof that he's going to offer, that he is the true Messiah. How could he do that? Is it just simply the providence? Well, I don't think so. Remember, this is a matter of prophecy. Now, once Jerusalem has been destroyed, there's no possibility of any other contender arriving in history, regardless of what the rabbis, how they might want to twist and turn this. There's just nobody else. If you look at the time frame, if you look at that very precise measuring device that Daniel gave us, it led us right up to the first advent, to the public ministry of Christ. And now Jesus is saying, look, the final thing that you're really going to see before Judgment Day, the final sign that you guys are going to have is this: Jerusalem is going to be destroyed. You're going to see the Son of Man coming in great power. You're going to see that fulfillment. And for you as a Roman, that should let you know that your doom has been sealed as well. Because if Jerusalem is going to be removed, certainly that fourth kingdom will come to an end, and that kingdom of stone will prevail, just as Nebuchadnezzar saw, just as Daniel interpreted, and so forth. It's all there. And so then the language comes in here about sending his angels with a great sound of a trumpet. That's the gospel going forth. Gathering in the elect, they're going out, being stripped of all of the Jewish shadows and types, all the ceremonies. Christianity is a very lightweight, mobile force. No longer will you have to go to Israel to be saved. Israel's coming to you. Christianity is about Israel turning outward and coming to you. You don't have to be like Naaman, going to seek a prophet in the land of Israel in order to be healed. The gospel is going to it's coming to a country near you, and that soon. That's the idea. The course of history after the destruction of Jerusalem is, in fact, the course of that kingdom of stone spreading. Matthew 24, 32-35, Mark 13, 28-31, Luke 21, 29-33.
Matthew 24, 32-35. Now learn a parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender and putteth forth leaves, ye know that summer is nigh. So likewise ye, when ye shall see all these things, know that it is near, even at the doors. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away.
Mark 13:28-31. Now learn a parable of the fig tree. When her branch is yet tender and putteth forth leaves, ye know that summer is near. So ye, in like manner, when ye shall see these things come to pass, know that it is nigh, even at the doors. Verily I say unto you, that this generation shall not pass till all these things be done. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away.
21:29-33. He spake to them a parable, behold the fig tree, and all the trees. When they now shoot forth, ye see and know of your own selves that summer is now nigh at hand. So likewise ye, when ye shall see these things come to pass, know ye that the kingdom of God is nigh at hand. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass away till all be fulfilled. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away.
So what lesson is this that we have here? Well, we have, I think, a lesson. Israel's a fig tree. He's already about to, or Israel is already about to make this determination. Once Christ is crucified, the determination is set. It's only going to be a matter of time until the judgment is carried out. How long does he give? He says, look, this generation is not going to pass away until all these things are fulfilled. What I've just told you about the destruction of Jerusalem, once they have attacked the branch, Christ, once they've crucified him, that determination is done. They started the clock ticking. It's just a matter of time till judgment is carried out. Now, the fact that he ends this section in all three Gospels saying, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away, is very much that language that is basically putting this forth as part of the proof, kind of like he did in Matthew 26:63-64, where he tells Pilate that this judgment is going to be the sign the Son of Man is in heaven. It's going to be the sign that the Son of Man really is the one who oversees history, providence. This is going to be the sign that these words are not just, they're not just the words of God, but they're my words, because you see, I am God. That's the connection that they should be drawing if they were to connect all the dots. He's claiming divinity here. He's claiming a knowledge, an infallible knowledge of the future, which is a characteristic of deity. And he's not setting it so far off that, you know, generation after generation will perish before we figure it out. Not like that at all. It's going to happen. It's going to happen right away. Right, finally, we want to look at Luke 21, 34-36.
Luke 21, verses 34-36. And take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and cares of this life, so that day come upon you unawares. For as a snare shall come on all that dwell on the face of the whole earth. Watch ye therefore and pray always, that ye may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man.
Yeah, here is more of an indication of the transition in the Olivet Discourse from the discussion of the destruction of Jerusalem to the discussion of final judgment and the second coming. So that's what is taken up here in Luke. And notice, and we'll see this next time as we continue, this language, or this idea that Luke has. Luke doesn't continue talking about the destruction of Jerusalem because there's nothing else to say about it. All of the other things that Luke says are scattered in different places. Things that Matthew brings together, or sometimes Mark brings together. We'll talk about that next time when we continue with the Olivet Discourse.
Stillwater's Revival Books is now located at PuritanDownloads.com. It's your worldwide online Reformation home for the very best in free and discounted classic and contemporary Puritan and Reformed books, MP3s, and videos. For much more information on the Puritans and Reformers, including the best free and discounted classic and contemporary books, MP3s, digital downloads, and videos, please visit Stillwater's Revival Books at PuritanDownloads.com. Stillwater's Revival Books also publishes the Puritan Hard Drive, the most powerful and practical Christian study tool ever produced. All thanks and glory be to the mercy, grace, and love of the Lord Jesus Christ for this remarkable and wonderful new Christian study tool. The Puritan Hard Drive contains over 12,500 of the best Reformation books, MP3s, and videos ever gathered onto one portable Christian study tool. An extraordinary collection of Puritan, Protestant, Calvinistic, Presbyterian, Covenanter, and Reformed Baptist resources. It's fully upgradable and it's small enough to fit in your pocket. The Puritan Hard Drive combines an embedded database containing many millions of records with the most amazing and extraordinary custom Christian search and research software ever created. The Puritan Hard Drive has been produced to assist you in the fascinating and exhilarating spiritual, intellectual, familial, ecclesiastical, and societal adventure that is living the Christian life. It has been specifically designed so that you might more faithfully know, serve, and love the Lord Jesus Christ, as well as to help you to do all you can to bring glory to His great name. If you want to love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, then the Puritan Hard Drive is for you. Visit PuritanDownloads.com today for much more information on the Puritan Hard Drive and to take advantage of all the free and discounted Reformation and Puritan books, MP3s, and videos that we offer at Stillwater's Revival Books.